on, doggies. Come on in. Here we go. Hi, well, welcome to Grow Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison, and I'm in my ain garden to start the programme. And I'll be joining the team in the virtual landscape in a minute. But before we do that, I thought you'd like a look around the nooks and crannies and see if it's been happening in here. I'll nae hang about because the rain's nae far away. Or should I say, the thunder and lightning isna far away. Such storms we have had. But despite that, I think, judging by the comments we folk out about, this is a season of bonny blossoms. Trees seem to be bigger, the flowers seem to be more profuse, and especially the roses. And I'm standing aside, one of my favourites, or should I say standing underneath one of my favourites. It's near that common, but it's a beaut. It's a tree rose called a geranium rose. And our head gardener, Dave Mitchell, will maybe tell me more about it. But the colour is unusual, like a cross between cherry and cerise. And the tree is around 15 feet or 5 metres big, just towering over the big wall. I'll put a photo of it on our Grow Radio webpage. And I'm hoping to get more tips about climbers to put on that big garden wall coming up in the programme. The greenhouse, well, it's producing lots of salads. The new tatties are being enjoyed, especially the Duke of York variety. And apart from the monsoon weather, nothing coming over us yet. I say yet. Never sure if it's going to happen this year with the weather, as you'll hear fae our resident beekeeper Ian Smith. But, as I said, nae time to hang about. Rain's getting heavier, and I dinna like the look of that sky. So come with me into the virtual garden to join the team. And welcome to Grow Radio.
Come on, doggies. Babs, come on.
Well, hello and welcome to Grow Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison and this is the Virtual Garden. But our thing in this programme is real, rooted and ready. We embrace the season and style. And it's the only thing we can embrace the new. We live in hope. But even if you haven't got a garden, dinna fash. This programme moves in mysterious ways or wonders to perform. In other words, you didn't need a garden to enjoy the programme. We cater for gardens, big or small, pots, windy boxes, or nothing. Just enjoy the company. So let me introduce the team. They move in mysterious wives as well. The head gardener himself, chair of the Open Garden Scheme and ex-curator of botanics in Edinburgh. Welcome, David Mitchell.
Hello there.
Oh, hi, David, you're there. And in the wheelhouse in Edinburgh, amongst the waves and knobs and sliders and other things, including bairns, come in, Richie Werner.
Aye, aye, how's it going?
Oh, we're going fine, I think. So far, so good, but the thunder's I'm mulling about somewhat.
Up and down the
lightning
country.
Lightning storms, everything. And our new lad, for looking after your questions on and off the waves, are you there, Andrew Davidson?
I am here, Frieda, if it like.
Good. You haven't been kind of hit by the lightning or the thunder yet. But there's been a time of thunder and monsoons, as I said earlier. Now, and you're going to tell us about the new gadget in a minute, Andrew.
Aye, I am, aye.
I'll make the recording questions easy peasy. Right,
aye.
So Abdi's fine.
Uh-huh.
Dave, Richard, Andrew, and you're all there. Nobody's been blown up.
Not yet.
No, as is our want, and we have wants about us, let's get started with a recorded question. And a wee minty, Andrew, will, as I said, will explain about the new button. And the new new recording button is a magic thing. First, recorded question is for George T. Watt about blaberries.
I've got a question about blaberries. That's the big American blueberries, not our wee tasty Scottish ones you get up in the hills. And I've got three plants, and one of them's got a good crop coming on it, and it's looking nice. The other two aren't quite so good, but I'm sure for next year they'll be fine. But what I'd like to ken is, what do I do about overwintering, and do I prune them? And if so, when do I prune them? Because I really care nothing about them, so it'd be good to get some advice, please. Thank you.
Right, Dave.
Ah, blueberries. Again, they're in the same family as heather and rhododendrons. And they're a grand crop, you know. They're full of antioxidants, and various other things, including potassium, and very high in vitamin C. They're one of the kind of so-called superfoods. They're like a moist acid soil, and it's very important to make sure they didn't dry out in the first year or two after you plant them. And get a bit of feeder, something like Grow More applied in the spring, or a wee drop of extra sulfate of potash when they're flowering. And they'll no say no to a pickled bone meal either. Now, he was asking about pruning. They didn't really need much pruning. All you really need today is cut out the dead and badly crossing branches. And another wee tip is, don't let them fruit too heavily in the first year or two. If you just maybe nip that off a wee bitty, it helps the plant to mature and get established. And after that, you know, look after them, keep them moist, well fed, and they'll look after you.
Right, thanks, Dave. I just noticed as I was walking in this morning that once again, my red currant bush has been stripped bare with a sawfly. Oh. Just absolutely gone. Not a leaf to be seen.
Oh,
the berries are still there. But that must have just happened suddenly overnight.
Aye,
the wee monkeys, eh?
They're ferocious wee scoundrels.
Amazing. This is the sawfly we're speaking about, Richie. Uh-huh. You ever had occasion with the sawfly doing your why?
I've actually not come across that, Ian. It just mills your plant down and that's it.
But just
David, tell him.
It just eats all the leaves and leaves the midrib. It's just
thing.
Like jaws. It's like jaws on legs.
It's left the best part on the bush.
It's not real. You didn't
it's
want
no
that in the garden. I'm glad
no.
You've not seen it.
I know. I need to try and find out. Well, I suppose. You know, I've got plenty to share around. Anyway, another recorded question. This is for Peter Reed up in Port Gordon, Murrayshire, about lady's mantle, Acamilla mollis. Okay, here's for Peter.
I've got several clumps of Acamilla mollis or lady's mantle, and I'd like some advice on dividing them, when the best time to do this is, and whether I can take them on in pots or they need to go straight back into the ground. Thank you.
David?
Well, you can have an offer soft spot for this bonny plant. Some folk think it's a scunner because it seeds everywhere, but I like its lime green foamy flowers. They remind me of the sea foam in the sunlight. It's a bonny thing. But one of the reasons it's offer prolific is because the flowers are apomictic. And that means that they can reproduce through a process known as parthenogenesis. And the seed forms without fertilisation. I'll leave you to ponder that.
Really?
Now, as regards lifting and dividing them, that can be done any time after the leaves have died down between November and March. And here in Scotland, I usually do it in the spring, and I just took a couple of forks, or kind of, we should call them grapes, and put them in back-to-back in the clump and lever them again in another and tear it apart. If they'll no split like that, you can use an old hand axe on the root ball. But just watch and nae hurt yourself, whatever way you're doing it. And then once you've divided it into wee bits, just plant it straight back into the ground.
Now, can I tell you, I tried to get rid of lady's mantle about 15 years ago, and I dug out heaps of it. I have still got lady's mantle springing up out again into that. You caught a scunner, I caught a monster. And you can, a little bit, facts that you didn't ken, but maybe haven't heard about. This is a plant that was used by the railway workers when they were marking the railways to put into the banks, you know, kind of when they were creating the banks, to hug the soil in place. The roots are so strong. And lady's mantle was planted around the place just to hug the banks so that nothing would slip onto the rail.
You've got
some other information as well, David,
haven't
you?
Well, another fascinating thing about it is if you go out in the morning after it's been raining or when there's heavy dew and you look closely at the leaves, you'll see how it protects itself from the water with tiny microscopic hairs that make the bead of water sit above the surface of the leaf. And that technology was the inspiration for some waterproof fabrics and other things. It's a fascinating plant. I love it. I wouldn't be without it in the garden.
Aye.
I would like to be out it in the garden. But
Och, Frieda,
you were telling them about the Velcro plant. What was that about?
Well, you can. Burdock has got wee hooks on its seed pods, and it's those wee hooks and the way that they cling to things that was the inspiration for Velcro.
Wow.
Can it used to shut your jacket or your trainers or whatever.
Aye. That's amazing. Amazing plants are an inspiration.
Nature, nothing's new in nature. It inspires man to do all sorts of things.
Okay, Peter, there's your information, and I hope you're very happy you wear the lady's mantle. And if you need any mare, just give a shout up. I'll be there with them any day. Okay, next question. It's an email this time. It's for Edna Stephen from Fraserburgh. We have a tree in our garden, I think it's a sorbus, that has developed a fungus, and my husband tried to saw it off, but it created sparks. Never seen anything like it before. The tree had no leaves this year, and the shrub beside it also has some leaves dying, and there seems to be some spores around the tree also. Is there any way we can save it, as it's a treasured part of our garden? Any help or advice would be most appreciated. David?
Well, looking at the photographs, Frieda, I'm good to say it looks to me as though the tree's dead. It's had its day, and it's best staying out. But you can, an awful lot of folk, when they're going to take out things like that, naturally, they go and cut it off right at the bottom. And that's not a very clever thing to do, because what you really want to do is cut it off with about a 5-foot stem, so that you've got that stem as a lever when you come to dig out the root.
Good you know, advice.
And I'm just going to say to this lady again, she's not to be sad. She's just to look at it as the loss of an old friend and an opportunity to get a new one. Somebody new to come into your life to celebrate a life well led in a special part of the garden. It's an excuse to go out to the garden centre.
Fair. Aye.
David now, Mitchell is a philosopher.
Aye.
You know, and really, I've just got to say it. Nae messing about, hauk it out, away and get a new plant. And as for the sparks, I dare again, Frieda, there's a thing called tinder fungus, which is Fomus fomentanarius. It's a kind of bracket fungus, sometimes called hoof fungus or horse's hoof fungus. It's also known as tinder bracket. It's got lots of common names. Oatsy, getting on. Fella that was fun, he died hundreds of thousands of years ago and was fun, his body was fun, in a glacier in Europe. And among his belongings was pieces of this fungus, because when it gets tiny wee sparks that hit it, kind of flint struck with iron parietes, it's great for helping you to light a fire. All I can think is if they cut through it, maybe the blade of the saw, I don't know. I think maybe the sparks was just fleeing because the tree was saying the last word and saying, come on, get me out of here.
I think Andrew's dad called it the burning bush, didn't he, Andrew?
Aye, he did. Aye. It's like a Bible.
That's a good name for it. It had a burning desire to be removed and to be replaced with something else.
Right. Speaking about sparks, Blether, Richie, we need an update about your garden. It's Fitz blooming, Fitz the Bears doing paddling pools. Are you having a fine time?
No, quite had the paddling pools. It's not been quite that warm, but we've been really enjoying cycling about the green and really admiring the bumbles. We've been very attracted to a very good display from my Astilbe this year. It's been absolutely gorgeous. It's like a static waterfall. It's so beautiful, and it's possibly my favourite plant in the garden. So I've been really enjoying that. And that's just browning off now, and I'm going to start maybe taking the flower heads off as they die back. But that's been fantastic, you know.
Okay, so. But are the bairns behaving?
Of course they are. They're my bairns. I mean, someone else might say, oh, those bairns.
Well, that's not the question you need to be asking, Frieda. You need to be asking if he's behaving. Well,
he's probably in the paddling pool with the bairns getting with you.
They're probably saying, Dan's done it again. Look at that, Mum. See what he's done.
Get me too
he kept
well,
bracken
you guys.
Things for a while. Laughing seemed to be bracken and kind of fan off. But no, Richie's still there. Right. On that note, another recorded question. This is for Fiona Dean Doonan Dalton about anemones.
Hello, Frieda and everyone at Grow Radio. It's Fiona here from Dalton in Dumfries and Galloway with a question for you all about anemones. We managed to grow a bunch of different kinds this year, from corms that we got from a specialist supplier in Holland, and they gave us the most fantastic show of colour. But they've all pretty much died back, the foliage has died back, there's been no new growth or flowers. So question is, what do we do with them now? How do we keep them in as good a condition as possible, or keep the corms as safe as possible so that they can hopefully give us just as good a show next year? Should have said we planted them in large terracotta pots, a number of them, and we'd really like to try and reuse these pots again this year for something else, if that's at all possible. So if you've got any advice about how we can do that, that'd be great. So thanks again, looking forward to hearing your advice and really enjoying the programme and hearing everyone's gardening questions and all the great tips that you're giving.
Lovely, Fiona. Okay, David.
Well, looking at the information that came along with the questions, Frieda, I think these are actually an enemy coronaria, and that includes the St. Brigid group, with groups like cultivars like Coronaria Duchene, Minstrel Blue, Minstrel Fuchsia, and Sulphide. If you're growing them outside in the ground, they need a light sandy soil. But the most important thing is that they must have a dry period after flowering. You've got to let the leaves die back naturally. And at that point, it's very important that they don't get too wet or the wee corums rot and die. If you're growing them in pots, let them die back, let them have that rest, and then knock them out of the pot through a riddle and get the corums and then repot them in February in a loam-based compost. One of the things I used to use when I grew them a long time ago, they're fussy and fiddly, but I used to have access to molehill loam, and I used to mix that with leaf mould and sharp sand. And for anybody that's growing them outside, you do need to give them a good mulch in the winter to protect them from the frost, or some folk in some parts of the country will even lift them and store them and then replant them in the spring when the soil warms up. But I have a funny feeling they've maybe got a wee bit too wet, so I would be getting them knocked out of the pots and seeing if the corms are there now.
Okay, Fiona, hope it helps, and thank you for sending that. Andrew, I'm delighted we've got this many recorded questions, and maybe this is a good time to explain your new invention. Andrew, as you can, is our production manager and technical wizard, and he has invented a new button. Right, over to you, Andrew.
Aye, I'm not taking credit for the invention of it, but I've made the whole process a lot simpler. So, what you could do now, if you go to growradio.com, the kind of website, and then go on there, and you'll see a big button, and it says record your question. You just hit that button, you spick a why, you can ask us anything you want about your garden, or flowers, or plants, or whatever, and then sends it direct to us, and that's it.
That's it.
Simplified the whole process. Aye, so there's no excuses for not getting in touch with your gardening questions now.
That is simplified, personified.
And, absolutely.
just by the way, your story about your tomato plant went doing half a wheel with folk were just roaring and laughing.
Well, it's funny. You should say that, because after my family heard that, they reminded us of a time my grandfather. So this is a thing that maybe runs in our family, because apparently my grandfather was growing mushrooms in a loft. Have you ever heard of that before? Folk?
No.
Aye. Oh, nay.
Aye, I can folk used to grow mushrooms in the loft and in the lunky hole and in a stair.
Well, I've never heard about it deliberately, but I've heard about it otherwise. But apparently they weren't growing, so he took the tops of boiled eggs, eggshells, and stuck them in the soil, and told my granny to come up and see the mushrooms that were growing up. So it seems like it's something that runs in the family, folk tricking folk about failed plants.
Swicks! There's swicking galore in your film. Just to recap, Andrew, when he was a young bear and tried to grow a tomato plant for his, he did that, but there was no tomatoes on it. But his dad, unbeknown to Andrew, sewed on little cherry tomatoes onto the leaves overnight. There was a miracle. And it wasn't until many years later that they confessed to Andrew that this is the thing.
The fastest the growing tomato was in the Northeast there.
It's maybe running in your family. That's a great story. Okay. Right, we take a wee breather for the questions and buttons and going outside again to join our beekeeper, Ian Smith. Now, the last time we heard the Ian, he was speaking about the swarming season and piping queen bees. Or the piping queen bees went doing as well as at relating a trick. But I thought it hasn't escaped a lot of us that the weather has gone wonky. The seasons aren't as if they were. And the extremes of weather, it's difficult to keep a semblance of normality in the garden. Need to mention out with the garden, mind you. So when I got the chance to speak to Ian again, he has seen in the news. We got onto the subject of the wonky weather. What does he make out?
Oh, I've never seen a season like this, and I've seen a fair few. Rain one minute, and then it's wind. We've had nae snow all winter, which is totally unusual. I've never seen such a changeable season, nothing so late.
And yet we had a snowstorm for about 24 hours near that long ago. It was the Chukot storm, or the Gaba Mai, or whatever you want to call it, the Gout storm. Again, we're going through that extreme to the next bit. Big, a lot of heat. And then the wheat in the early part was near a good thing for bees, was it?
Well, the bees just didn't like dumping wheat. They'll stand any amount of call, but the dump is the thing that they don't like. Knocked them away back this year. They're coming on new, but yeah.
Is this the latest you've ever seen it?
It would be the latest I've ever seen it, aye. Yeah, it's the latest ever I've seen.
And you were telling me about you're watching a farmer plowing.
Aye, that's right.
What happened there?
Well, it was the board that plew, that's the bit that turns over the earth. Uh-huh. The lad had been plowing all day. At night, when he stopped, the boards of the plew was just shining like a mirror. And we went back up the following day, following morning. I just looked at the plew and it was all rusty. It had been rained during the night. And it was all, I actually rubbed it with our hands to see if it wasn't
rust
eating into the board of the plow.
So, Fit, why was that? Why did it get so rusty so quick?
Well,
something to do with the rain, surely.
Well, I'm no chemist, but my guess is it was acid rain.
So far as that coming for you?
Well, it's coming for you, so I'm afraid we're vehicles and aeroplanes and you name it.
Even in this time of lockdown, we're still getting pollution like that.
Yes. I think that's the main thing we're fighting.
The main reason why we should be growing vegetables, healthy vegetables, keep a healthy diet, yes. Are we? And, of course, looking after the bees is important, isn't it?
Really important, aye. We've got to look after the bees because there's none near the bees in the country there used to be. Nearly every little cottage, gamekeeper, gardener, farm worker, or whatever, they all needed a few hives of bees. Mm-hmm. And that's all gone.
It's all gone as well. You see that pheasant? That pheasant kind of wanders about. I'm trying to feed the birds, aiming it. And they're all gathering round about, the pheasants, to get the feed for the birds as well. And have you heard the racket the hoose sparrows are making, the smuggies? What a racket, and you go to feed the birds again, and they make a racket as well. And I'm sitting waiting for me to feed them. And you came for the sun just before you arrived. I was sitting here watching the swallows coming in.
Oh, aye.
Across, you see the sheepy shed across there. And they're nesting in there.
Mm-hmm.
The sheepy shed, I should explain, that's for the sheep go, the six sheep, the most spoilt sheep on earth, go in to keep out of the rain, keep out of the snow, and they don't like the sun too much. So have you ever heard sheep that are say spoilt? Not nearly. These are really spoiled sheep. But the swallows are taking advantage of them and they're nesting in the shed.
I like it in here.
We like it in there.
Yeah.
Right. I bet I got to move on and join the gardeners some way in the virtual studio. They'll be wondering if it's happened to me. Ian, thank you for this, but dinna go on. Ian Smith speaking about the wonky weather. And if you have observations yourself about how the weather is affecting your garden, just press the button and record it on our website, as you heard, www.growradio.com. Just say, it's wonky weather. Right, you're listening to Grow Radio. This is Frieda Morrison, and with me is Heat Gardener Dave Mitchell, Soon Sorter Richie Werner, and Production Sorter Andrew Davidson. Andrew Davidson's there. Right, question again, recorded question. And Dave often speaks about gardening the earth wheel. This is a good example of our international ambitions. This is for Jill McCullough from Portland, Oregon, about hummingbirds.
I'm originally from Fraserburgh in the northeast of Scotland, and I'm currently biding in Portland, Oregon with my husband. We've been enjoying listening to your show from across the pond, and we're interested to get your advice on a few wee chums that have been fleeing around our balcony over here. So far, we've seen twa hummingbirds and put out a sugar water feeder. Would you have any recommendations of flowers or hanging plants we could get to encourage them there? Our balcony does get plenty of sun, but it tends to be later in the day and is overall pretty shady due to it being surrounded by a bunch of big trees. Thank you ever much, and sending you a big fit like for the USA.
Oh, lovely, Jill. Right, Dave, hummingbirds. What do you think about hummingbirds?
Well, I'm awful lucky, Confreda. He spent a bit of time in the High Sierra and in the Sonoran Desert, thanks to friends in California and Oregon. And I've witnessed these wee miracles of nature. You can hummingbirds are just stunning. There's over 330 different species,
wow,
right from Alaska in the north down to the very tip of South America. And some of these wee birds will migrate over 500 miles in one day.
Oh.
But their average body weight is 4 grams. That's 0.14 ounces. And out of that, a third of that is muscle. Not only do they have the ability to hover and vibrate their wings at anywhere between 15 and 80 times a second, but their wee heart beats at 1,260 beats per minute. They're an absolute miracle to witness and to see. And they've a specially adapted tongue that's covered in wee microscopic hairs. It works like an elastic micro pump. And it's about twice the length of its bill, so that means their tongue can be up to 4 centimetres long. And it's specially adapted to soak up sugar for the nectar of flowers. One of their favourites is the bee balm. And they love bent stamens and phloxes. They'll even visit foxgloves. They like salvias and fuchsias, hibiscus, and some of the big climbers like yellow bells and trumpet vine and honeysuckles. But for this place in Oregon, I would particularly suggest hyssop and the cardinal flower, Lobelia cardinalis, and maybe the Cape fuchsia, Phagellus capensis. You know, but for anybody that's got hummingbirds in their garden, they've a gift for nature.
Wow. No, I was just thinking there when you were speaking about observing the hummingbirds. I was out in Nicaragua a few years ago, and I was sitting in a garden in Managua, and it's the first time I'd seen a hummingbird defitted to the floors, and I sat there just transfixed by this beautiful vision of a hummingbird. As you say, they are wee miracles. I've never forgotten that.
And I think the other thing, Frida, is the sound. The wings vibrating. It's like an instrument in the wind. It's just incredible.
You're absolutely right. Instrument in the wind. Well, but that ain't doing is the best quote of the day. Instrument in the wind. Thank you for that, Jill. Much appreciated. And enjoy the hummingbirds. Wish we were there. Audio question again. This is for Caroline McCall for Edinburgh about peony roses.
I'd like to ask a question about my peony roses. They always come out much later than everyone else's, and they're too tall. They're very leggy. So when they do come out, the flowers just fall over. Should I replant them into a more sheltered spot? Thank you very much.
Okay, back to David.
Well, peonies like light. They love light, and they do best in full sun, partial shade at a push. They like deep, loamy soils, rich in humus. And they need to be sheltered for late frost and drying winds. It sounds to me as this one needs moved into a position where it's going to get a wee bit more light, and that should be done either in the autumn or probably best here in Scotland in early spring before the growth starts. And don't forget to fork in some well-rotted leaf mould or garden compost into its new position before you plant it.
Thanks for that question, Caroline. And on the subject of peony roses, I'm going to quote a wee bitty for the Scots Lead Association magazine. The New England Lowlands 96 is just out. David, you've got a copy as well. It's a lovely magazine.
It came the other day.
It's a great magazine.
It is. It's grand. You get a good chuckle when you read it.
Okay. I'm going to quote this in this for Maureen Sangster. I'm gone to where the peonies bloom in the garden bran fine, where apples ripen o'er the was, and tell him that he's mine. Is that a lovely? Oh. That's just a lovely
bit. That was a lovely poem, that. I enjoyed that poem when I saw it.
It's a lovely. Right, on my rose, I've mentioned the geranium rose. What do you ken about it? It's a beauty. It's a huge, massive tree rose.
Well, it's a form of Rosa moisei, which comes from Western China originally. It was first introduced in 1894, and then it was introduced again in 1903 by E.H. Wilson. But that lovely red for him that you've got, geranium, that was actually raised in the RHS garden at Wisley in 1938. And if you have a big garden, it's something that should be in every garden. Oh, because not only do you get the flowers, you get the most amazing hips of it in the autumn. It's it really is an awful bonny thing.
It is. It's one of my pride and joys. That's it. Right, speaking about pride and joys again, my wall of the garden. You've got advice for climbers. What can you say about that?
Well, there's an awful lot to say about climbers, Frieda. You kind of, gardening and was has been going on for centuries, whether it's a rose round the door or honeysuckle up the gable end or old man's beards scrambling over the wall. And here in Scotland, again, we've a grand climate and we can offer kind of home to more than 2,000 different species and cultivars of climbing plants. Big, slinky, rampant things or sedate plants, modest plants, annuals, perennials, shrubs, exotic rarities. Again, when you're thinking about climbers, dinna forget the three P's, planning, preparation and planting. And there's a fourth in pruning, because I mean, you're going to have to prune this thing after you get it for the rest of your days, as long as it's there. So choosing a climber is a long-term investment. And one of the first things you need to think about is how do they climb? Because climbers have adventitious roots, things like hydrangeas and hedras, and they have roots that cling to the wall. And then you've got others like honeysuckle and jasmine that climb up the wall using a twining stem. And then there's others like sweet peas that have wee tendrils, or vines that have wee tendrils that they crawl with. And then there's some even that climb with twisting leaf stalks. And others, some of the rambling roses have big hooks or thorns. And then there's the one, Boston Ivy or the Virginia Creeper. The one's a more difficult thing. I'm no keen on it because it's got suckers and adhesive pads that stick onto the wall. So when you choose what to grow, dinna just rush out and buy what you fancy. Think about where is it going to go, what your soil's like. And if you want a sun lover, you'll no go wrong with Actimidia colomicta. Beautiful big climber with wonderful pink, purple, white, yellow flashed leaves. Or Cistus batandiri, the pineapple broom. That's a grand big wall shrub, gets to about 5 metres in height. I love it. And then a couple of shady characters, well, Lonicera periclima, Serotina, and the late Dutch Irish, lovely fragrance, you'll no go wrong with that. And it should be pruned back after flowering. Schizandra rubiflora, I'm awful fond of that. It's got bony red fruits and nice foliage. And then, you know, queer-like things that love the sun, really hot sunny spots, things like Sophra microphylla, or the one beautiful Berberdopsis coralina, the coral plant, which has twining evergreen stems and lovely deep coral pink flowers. It's an unusual thing, originally for Chile. That's a must. And then there's even a monk's hood that climbs, you know, an aconitum. It climbs up things. And then, well, I would be keen enough to try the parrotbill, Clianthus puniceus from Australia. And, I've said nothing about clematis or about roses. I mean, where do you begin? There's hundreds. I like, personally, Clematis Bill McKenzie, big yellow flowers, and roses, well, I don't know. I just love Claire Austin. If I had room, I would grow Rosa Kifskate, but you need an awful lot of space for that. Wisterias, I was in the garden centre yesterday looking. Michty, there's an awful dose of them now. I would go in for Sinensis prolific, but there's a lot of new varieties. And you do need to think too about the wall. You need to treat the wall with respect and what you use for a support system. You didn't just poke a hole and shove it in. You need to prepare a good hole like we talked about for the fruit trees. Mm-hmm. Because you're putting it in there for it to last for a long time. Keep it watered. Well watered, get a bit of a frame to get it started to climb on and then take it up onto the wires, depends on what it needs. They can give you a lot of pleasure. I love plants on walls. And there's an awful good book called Gardening on Walls, which if you look around, it's still available second hand. It was written by a former colleague of mine in the Botanic Garden and illustrated by her, Vicky Matthews and Chris Gray Wilson. It's a cracking book. There's lots out there. The most important thing is to choose with care, follow the 3P rule, think about the pruning and plant for posterity.
Whew. That was a fair detailed session there, Dave, but full of terrific information. Thank you for that. Richie, fit about your climbers. Last time I was in your garden, you had a lot of climbers, including bairns. Are they surviving?
Indeed. Listen, you know, I would just like to add as a caveat to your preparation is if you're going against an old wall, make sure your mortar is sound. I actually almost lost my garden wall
that last time,
a
remember?
Couple of years ago.
Aye.
You've really got to look after the wall, Richie, and use proper vine eyes and wires and just be careful.
Oh, aye. I had to take all mine down, so I had to repoint the hail wall. But I saved it, so that's something. But regarding climbers, I've had really two great sort of shows this year for a gorgeous orange honeysuckle. It's done awfully well, I think, because I had to cut them all back so severely a couple of years ago, and it's just gone absolutely daft this year. And I'm getting a really nice show from my jasmine. So it's really dying away.
I didn't mention jasmines, and I like jasmine. And you're saying about getting a good haircut.
Oh, aye.
A lot of these things, if they get a really good hard pruning, you know, once they're overgrown, it's amazing how they come back.
It's come back.
You know, I'm not advocating doing it regularly.
No.
But it doesn't do any harm.
But what a show for the honeysuckle this year, honestly.
Lovely smell. Okay.
Aye, there you go.
You're listening to Grow Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. With me is Heath Gevner, David Mitchell, and our sewing sorter, Richie Werner, and our new production sorter, Andrew Davison. Right. Very last few questions. Record the question again. And everything, say George T. Watt, about orchids.
My partner's got a couple of these orchid plants. And the flowers come and gone, and the plants are there, and they're looking quite healthy, but nothing's happening. And I wonder, what do you do now to get them to flower again? Because we're not ashamed just to throw them out. So if you could give us some advice on how to get them to flower again, that would be grand. Thank you.
Okay, David.
Well, I don't like to say this, George, but you've just to be patient. You can. I think you're talking about the Phalaenopsis, the moth orchids. And they thrive in our central heated homes, and they flower throughout the year. We never used to see them when I was a young gardener, but now I've got them on the windowsill. They flower 3 or 4 times a year, and I shift mine for the southwest facing kitchen windowsill after they flower to the bathroom, where they get a wee bit of a dry out and a wee bit of a rest. I often cut the flower stalk back to the second bud. And if you do that, it produces another side shoot coming away, and it will flower on that. That cool period and the rest after they flowered is very important. And the other thing that the Phalaenopsis didn't like, they didn't like the roots drying out. But equally, they didn't like to be standing in water either. But, you know, generally, I find actually, after flowering, cut the stalk back, wee bit of ignorance, put them somewhere cool, and they'll move along coming back into flower.
Okay. Listen, George, thank you for that, and thank you for all your support. Okay, this is a question. Email Faye Arlene Foreman. Advice, please, on growing wild flowers. Tried sowing seeds? Nothing. Is there a better way? Dave?
I'll always grow in my wild flowers from seed that have come from a specialist company. Here in Scotland, I'd recommend Scotia Seeds. You can get single species packets or you can get mixed species packets. Generally, you should sow them outdoors when the soil warms up between March and June or in mid-August to late September. Wee tip, sow them very close to the surface. They don't like to have their seed covered over. And if anybody's wanting to know a lot more about them, there's an awful good book by Christopher Lloyd, just simply called Meadows. But sowing them outside and face seed, reputable source, spring and near the surface. Don't bury them. If you bury the seeds, they'll no germinate.
Right. I was listening to that very patiently. I tried that, sowing wildflower seeds very, very, very politely correct. And I thought, I'll do my bit for nature. I sowed my wildflower seed near the surface. Every bird, every single bird in the neighbourhood heard about it.
Aye.
They had parties for days outside. There were smoking fags in our head and kind of trendy dances and nothing. But what a time they had. I didn't have a single wild flower that season. Not a single flower. But the birds were so happy. So there you are. You've got to try and balance it out. If it's worth trying, for Dave said, near the surface. But be aware, the birds will be very, very happy. Okay, Dave, can I squeeze in another question for Brian O'Hara? He's up in Inverness. And he wants a plan for a compost system. And I've suggested three bays. I use three bays, one for the new stuff. You put it in the second bit, and then you put it in for the second bit and the third bit, and it's ready. What would you suggest?
I mean, that's a good way to do it. The key to making good compost is turning it regularly and mixing the materials. You shouldn't need to use activator, but you know, if you might want to get it started. And the other thing is the compost should always sit on bare ground so that the microbes can move up into the pile, but turning it regularly. As your stuff comes out of the garden, put it into yin bay and then make the heap, mixing up herbaceous grass, not too much grass, rotted leaves, household vegetable waste. Do it in layers. And if you're living near the beach, that doesn't do any harm to put some washed up seaweed into it. I know, I've seen us do that. But it's turning it regularly.
Then you put that into the second bay and leave that to kind of fester about.
Ah, but turn it when it's in the second bay too. Aye. Turn it regularly.
And then you start the first bay from scratch again. And then when you're working away, when you're about to put your first bay into your second bay, you put the second bay into the third bay.
And there's another tip, Frida, that I've seen it done in a garden called Carnell, and it's based on an Indian system. You get two or three big stobs, about 4 inches in diameter, and you build the compost up round about those posts. And then when the heap's getting gone, especially when it's in that second bay, lift the post out and that lets air into the very bottom of the heap and it fuels it. A compost heap should be like a big oxygenated engine, feeding the microbes and breaking everything down, getting the goodness to come back and put it back into the soil.
Aye, and worms. Worms love compost.
Ah, worms. I love worms. I've loved worms since I was a boy. They're amazing things, worms, and there's a lot of... Oh, didn't get me started about worms.
Well, we will be getting started about worms because that's going to be our topic for next programme. We're going to be looking at the secret life of worms, amazing. And it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. David and I keep kind of phoning and say, do you care about worms? We've got a really good book to tell you about, but we'll tell you about worms next programme. Right, can I invite you now to get in contact with your gardening questions? We would like to hear from you. Name it if you've just started. We've all been there. And I hope you've enjoyed our dinner doing the garden again. Dinner put off. Get in touch. Okay, here's the email address to send your emails and press the recording button on our website. Andrew, are you there for the information?
I am here. So the website is www.growradio.com or you can get in touch on email at info@growradio.com. But I would say you should go on a website, push a button, record a question and send it directly to us. Nae scuttering about, easy.
Nae scuttering about, that's our mantra for the day.
That's it, we love to hear all of these dulcet tones.
Aye, we do. Okay, on behalf of the team, Dave Mitchell, Andrew Davidson, Richie Werner and myself, Frieda Morrison, enjoy your garden.